Welcome back, one and all, to another day, another week here at the Dan Rich Report. I'm John Iadarola, very lucky to be joined, as always, on Mondays by Francesca Fiorentini, host of the Vituation Room, which is moving to a whole new home this week. Tell us all about it.
Hey, happy Monday. We're gonna be moving to tomorrow's is Tuesdays. Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Be there. It'll be great. We're talking about right wingers trying to do comedy tomorrow, which I'm excited about. Cause oftentimes, generally, the internet doesn't pick up on a lot of sarcasm or satire. Oftentimes, we have to explain when we're making a joke. It's just fitting. And then right wingers, of course, do not get irony at all. So yeah. Guys, at Franny Fio is where you follow the show. You can listen as a podcast. Obviously, we're on the TYT network, the Vituation Room. Get at it.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, I often have to explain when I'm making a joke, and I explain it, and then I think they get it cerebrally. And they understand it and respect it so much that they don't feel obligated to like lower things by laughing.
Sure.
I respect that. I think humor should be cerebral and quiet.
They're like, I could laugh, but I'd rather be offended. So I'm gonna go with offended.
Exactly. we're very glad to have everyone here. Look, there's a lot going on in the news. We're gonna cover some of the big hits. We're gonna balance it out with a little bit of fun. We're gonna be joined, if you're watching the full extended show, we're gonna be joined live by a guest at the beginning of the aftermath. Olivia Giuliana, who raised literally millions of dollars thanks to Matt Gaetz's dumbass. Can I say that? I can say that.
Yeah.
Dumbass. His dumb ass. That's why. I tried to catch myself in the middle there. So that's good. Look, there are things that we can't get to, some terrible things happening over the weekend. We're gonna continue to track as much as we can. But we are gonna be talking about a lot, including some good news. So everyone, I'm gonna need you to buckle up, hit the like button, share the stream if that's something you're into. You can send us comments, tweets, super chats, and we'll respond as we go. Before we jump into our regularly scheduled programming though, I do wanna say that while we like to cover the news and talk about it, we also want to ideally be solutions focused. And admittedly, there are a lot of crises we talk about constantly that we can't individually solve. Like we've tried, but I can't solve the climate crisis. But this weekend, I did solve one crisis facing our nation. And I have mapped out a path that the rest of you can follow if you'd like to be a part of the solution. All you have to do is go to my Instagram, instagram.com/JohnIadarola, and you will see that although the nation is no longer going to be able to experience the delicious taste of Choco Tacos, I made my own homemade ones and they were delicious, and you too can make them. If you have too much time, you can make it. Anyway, go take a look at that. It was a lot of fun.
I thought you were gonna say inflation. I solved inflation.
No, I don't have anything on that. With Choco Tacos.
Was that a hit from the like supply chain situation?
They implied that there's record demand for the product, and so they have to cut something of their like whole product line, not that product.
Mm.
And it doesn't make a lot of sense. I think we got played. I think it was a PR thing. I think we got IHOPed. Honestly, if I have to be,
it's a case against dessert monopolies. If anything,
definitely. Well, I took it over. They can get rid of it. They think, but they can't stop me from making them. My wife probably can. I don't think she's gonna let me do it again. Anyway.
Now I want
Johnny gains weight on the Choco Tacos. Anyway, with all that said, we've got news arguably as important. And so why don't we launch into that, starting with this.
The yeas are 50, the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative, and the bill as amended is passed.
They actually did it. The Democrats did it. And by it, I mean literally anything. I've been begging them to, and they did. The Inflation Reduction Act has passed the Senate. Not a single Republican supported it. Why would they? It does some good things, and they're not into that. But it did pass. And in this video, we are going to talk about some of the good and some of the bad. We're going to start off, though, acknowledging in advance of all of the good stuff that's still in the bill, and some of it, by the way, didn't make it through the Voterama, as we predicted last week that it wouldn't, that initially Build Back Better was supposed to be like $3.5 trillion and would have included things like paid family leave, funding for universal preschool, as well as expanding the child tax credit. All incredibly significant things that could have done a lot of good, both to help people who are struggling economically coming out of the COVID crisis, or you know, in the area of family leave, just catching us up to the rest of the developed world. But we didn't have that. We didn't have the $3.5 trillion. We certainly didn't have the more than $3.5 trillion than that a hypothetical President Sanders would have put forward. What we ended up getting was hundreds of billions, which is good. And we'll dive into what that actually amounts to in practice. But we knew going into the weekend that there was going to be some attempts to water it down. We're gonna spotlight a couple of the successful attempts a little bit later on. For now though, know that Senate Republicans offered dozens of amendments trying to strip out significant portions of the bill. For instance, they don't want the IRS to get more funding. Gee, I wonder whose interests they're serving when they try to stop the IRS from doing audits. Anyway, eliminating school mandates having to do with COVID and all that. And so generally trying to make the bill as weak and as small and pathetic as possible, because it spends money to help people and that's not what they're in DC for. They did that. Bernie Sanders also put forward amendments. He had amendments on prescription drug negotiations, as well as reinstalling the enhanced child tax credit. He also, by the way, tried to add an amendment that would have covered vision and dental care for seniors. Right. And none of these unfortunately worked. And he's been very critical of this bill because it's so watered down. He did end up voting for it. And I just want to quickly say that I saw a Twitter thread of some like Biden loving centrists so thrilled that Bernie Sanders failed in his amendments to try to get vision and dental coverage for America's seniors. They were so delighted to mock him that he failed to get, you know, some 70-year-old's teeth fixed.
Yeah.
Just disgusting. There's a lot of disgusting new around.
It's amazing that all he wants to do is help seniors chew. And given the average age of the Senate, you'd think that would be, you know, something they would understand. But of course, they've got great healthcare. They're not relying on Medicare. They've got amazing dental work. Obviously, I think Nancy Pelosi and even Joe Biden, honestly, let's be real, proves that every single day. A day without dentures for the Senate. Let's do it, people, and see if we can get some goddamn health, I mean, some dental care and some vision care for seniors. But you gotta hand it to Bernie for trying. I do think it is amazing to watch centrists be so excited, like you're saying, that he didn't get more for people. And let's be honest, we're at a time when there's a rollback of fundamental rights for half the population, specifically when it comes to people who can bear new life and who have to carry that life for 9 months and then give birth to that life, nurse it, take care of it for the rest of its life. Or, you know, whatever, like 15 and a half or whenever it's cool to like drop them off at a playground and be like, peace. But the point is this.
Eight.
These are Republicans who claim that they love families, and they're still against something like paid family leave, still against universal child care, and Democrats can't even bring them to the table on their own BS, on their own like anti-choice, you know, whatever, Handmaid's Tale crap to be like, hey, you guys said you support families. What about even extending the child tax credit? No. They don't even want that. And John, you studied poli-sci. Like, come on. There's something legislatively wrong, not just with the Senate in and of itself, but with 50 senators being able to not vote for a bill that they still helped to gut. What is that? How is that at all part of our democratic process?
Well, that's sort of sick. That's the side that's sick leading into it. Assuming that the House, which is going to pick it up on Friday and vote on it, and then it would almost immediately be signed, we get to experience over the next 3 months or next couple of years something even sicker on the tail end. So what always happens when the Democrats pass a bill and the Republicans don't support it, but it passes? What happens on the other side? Do you know? The Republicans brag about bringing home the money they voted against. So when EV chargers are being built in Kentucky or whatever, they're gonna be like, we brought home the EV money. We're doing conservation. We're saving species. I tried to kill it. I didn't want it to succeed. But now you should love me because I happen to be here. And my attempt to kill it was flaccid. I didn't succeed in that. So vote for me. That's what they're going to do. But anyway, we're talking now about some of the good. And by the way, we still got more bad coming. But just to reiterate, if you're coming into this process a little bit late, some of the good in the Inflation Reduction Act, $370 billion for climate change. That's good. That is, they say, the most that's ever been spent to deal with climate change, which is true. And it's true at the exact same time as the statement, and it is not nearly as much as we should be spending. It should be 10 times higher, but it is the most that we've ever spent. So that's good. Some of the most expensive drugs Medicare will be able to negotiate for, not all of them and not immediately, but that's good. Healthcare subsidies on the ACA will be extended, which is great for the many people who use that. And it would have been really politically stupid to let those lapse right before a midterm election. 15% minimum tax on corporations making $1 billion or more in income, with certain exceptions, which we will get to later in this block. IRS tax enforcement, they're getting like $80 billion. And the excise tax on stock buybacks, which will not stop them literally at all, but will raise a little bit of money when corporations continue to do it. Now, we've got tax incentives to manufacture and purchase electric vehicles, generate more wind and solar electricity, and support things like direct air capture and hydrogen production. All of this is good. Independent analyses show that the bill, combined with the stuff that we'd already passed, some changes made under Obama, could cut as much as 40% of US greenhouse gas emissions by the end of the decade. That is not as much as we had said we want to get to, but I guess it's better than the current path. However, bear in mind, Joe Manchin did, in getting this to happen, also undercut it in a number of different ways. There are provisions calling for offshore oil lease sales in the Gulf of Mexico. That's great for the environment. Coast of Alaska as well, as well as a commitment to take up a separate measure to ease the permitting of new energy projects, which my knee-jerk reaction would be to say, if it's not under reconciliation, there's no chance of passing. But it's to ease the permitting of new energy projects. So hey, maybe it'll get 75 votes, who knows? Also, and let's acknowledge the Mountain Valley Pipeline, which was being built by people who are big campaign donors to Joe Manchin, is going to be receiving a cut of this money to help it finally get finished. It's a 304-mile long gas pipeline that cuts through 1,000 streams and wetlands, but don't worry, pipelines never leak. So all of that's good, Francesca. I'm being sarcastic. It is good. It is good. My question for you is, acknowledging all of the ways that it could have been better and the ways it was made worse at the last moment, which we're going to get to, how much should we shift our evaluation of Joe Biden's first term now that this will be passed? How much does that change your evaluation?
It doesn't change my evaluation personally. I still think Joe Biden has stripped away or let lapse the most popular portions of the initial American Rescue Plan. And that was the child tax credit. And that was, and I also think he has not made good on some of his biggest campaign promises. And that would also be things like student debt. And I know we're gonna talk about that later. What it does show is that yes, he can get something done, and that the Democrats are not like utter buffoons, right? That they are not completely incapable of doing anything. But in order to get that, right? I mean, looking at this bill, honestly, we are truly like with one hand taking like carbon out of the atmosphere, and with the other hand just like choking out a sea lion. Like that is effectively what we're doing. And maybe we will protect, we will mitigate the disaster for our grandchildren, but our grandchildren's, our great grandchildren, things are still going to be the same. And again, it is just, it is what this administration does generally, which is get a very milquetoast piece of legislation that basically just says, I did it, and it's going to be a little less bad for a shorter amount of time than you wanted. Therefore, you should vote me in. And we're all like, well, guess what? We live in the ninth ring of hell. I guess we want to get to the eighth. Cool. So, and this is again, but on a long-term platform, to say nothing of fighting fascism, but on a long-term platform of fighting climate change, this ain't it. And people like the Sunrise Movement leaders from Varshini Prakash say, this is not the climate bill that this generation needs, right? However, it's the one that we've got. Look, last thing I'm gonna say, streams don't have lawyers. Right? The earth doesn't have a lawyer. But like, what is the cost of polluting all of those places? What's the cost of polluting the air? What is the cost of polluting the ground? My guess is that has not been factored in to the overall cost benefit. We know it hasn't been factored in to how much this bill would quote unquote cost us and quote unquote, how are we going to pay for it? And where is the money going to come from? Where's the money going to come from when you've dried up streams? Where's the water gonna come from when you've contaminated it?
Oh, well, so, don't worry. Sinema put in the drought prevention measures for Arizona.
So oh, brilliant. Oh, brilliant. So Amazon will be selling bottled water all across the West Coast. It'll be great.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you run out of your bottled water, the drivers can refill it for you. Anyway, that's a pee joke.
That is a pee joke. I love a pee joke.
Because they're abused and they have to pee in bottle. You get it? See, it's better when you have to explain the joke. Anyway, yes, I'm of two minds. Look, I love to admit when I was wrong. I didn't think they were gonna pass any bill. Now, how wrong I was is mitigated by the fact that there's a bunch of stuff in it that they wouldn't have passed it if it didn't have money that goes to corporations, let alone the Votorama stuff we're gonna turn to. But I think we do have to acknowledge if we are wrong about something, we should acknowledge it. I didn't think they'd do anything, and they certainly didn't do what I would want to do. But let's bear in mind, Biden won in 2020, not Bernie. So, I mean, that's what we get. But we can hopefully get a good progressive in 2024. We can hopefully boot Sinema out of the Senate. Hopefully, we can get a couple more seat buffer, and then hopefully that doesn't lead to people like Tester all of a sudden becoming even more Manchin-y. Stay tuned. With that, let's turn to some of the other aspects of this. And we're not going directly into the video, but I'm gonna throw the video relatively soon. Okay, I'm just making sure. Anyway, let's talk about this now. I don't know if we have a sidebar thing. Oh, we do. Hey, how nice. Republicans tried to water down the Inflation Reduction Act in a number of different ways, and thankfully did not succeed. But there were a few where they did. And getting rid of the insulin price cap is one of the most needlessly petty, cruel things I could imagine them doing. So of course, they did it. They successfully stripped a proposed $35 per month cap on out-of-pocket spending on insulin for patients enrolled in private insurance from the IRA. These are people who have insurance. They're doing everything that they're told they're supposed to do. They're doing the responsible thing. They've managed the whole insane bureaucracy and all of that. They would still be spending money. And yet, no, the Republicans want to ensure that they will spend far more, hundreds, potentially $1,000 or more dollars more every month. And they did this sure that the American people either won't get that message and won't understand that the 7.5 million people or so who take insulin on a regular basis will get screwed over financially by this, or they believe that they have so got a chokehold on their base that even conservatives who are being bled dry by insulin costs will be like, well, you know, I can't afford this. I'm going broke, but I guess I hate the groomers. So I suppose I'll stay with the people who actively despise me and want me to pay more. But anyway, let's talk about how this exactly happened. Because it wasn't just the Republicans' mind. The Senate parliamentarian who is the most powerful being in the multiverse at this point, I think it's an upcoming Marvel villain, ruled that the earlier provision for the spending cap was not related to the federal budget. I don't see how that makes any sense. It's literally about a budget cap. But anyway, they tried to do a waiving of the rules that requires 60 votes to put an amendment that reinstituted the cap. 7 Republicans sided with Democrats to keep the insulin cap. Here's the interesting thing. We get to throw to, hey, good job, Bill Cassidy, Susan Collins, Josh Hawley. Ugh, he was the good guy here. Cindy Hyde-Smith, John Kennedy, Lisa Murkowski, Dan Sullivan, they voted with the Democrats. But there are some interesting names that aren't on that list. And the interestingest part about it is that they loved to talk about how much they didn't like that insulin was expensive. So let's start off with a little bit of Joni Ernst.
We've heard the heartbreaking stories of individuals who could not afford their insulin, were forced to ration and skip doses, and as a result, they lost their lives. And Iowans have been very clear with me where they stand on this issue. They want to see us come together to advance solutions that drive down those drug prices.
It is heartbreaking. People have to skip or not take full doses. They die as a result of it. And my constituents have been very clear that they won't accept this. And so given the opportunity to put a cap on the price of this, you'll notice her name was not in the list that we read. Despite the fact that they're already paying for their health insurance, despite the fact that they'd still be paying the $35 a month, that's not enough for Joni Ernst and the vast majority of the Republican Party. You cannot pay enough to satisfy these people, because no matter how much you pay, they've been paid by Big Pharma to keep the price of insulin as high as possible. It's not just her. Mitt Romney had tweeted previously about how outrageous the cost was. How could it possibly go up like this? You'll notice that his name wasn't on the list. And isn't he supposed to be one of the reasonable moderate ones? And yet did not vote to institute this price cap. Weird how they're so aggrieved, Francesca, but when they get the opportunity to actually wield the power they have, suddenly maybe $1,000, $1,500 for insulin a month, that's acceptable.
Oh, let's pose with some children. Oh God, that's so real. Like child diabetes, let's talk about it. You know, like all this stuff, it's so sick and so bald-faced. And I wish, you know, the Lincoln Project is so obsessed with Trump and all the, like, you know, folks who love to call out Trump as if Trump isn't an aberration, or he's just the mushroom that grew off of the rotten party that is the Republican Party. And you have it right there. And so what I'm saying is, I wish that the Lincoln Project and other groups would actually run these ads all throughout Iowa of Joni Ernst saying that BS, and then, oh, let's go to her floor vote. Nope, she didn't do it. The problem is, especially when it comes to healthcare, man, it's Democrats and Republicans that are invested in our bankrupt or our very, very rich private healthcare system, right? And no one's actually looking out for the people. Does this work? Is Big Pharma gouging us, you know? And once again, every senator, every congressperson should be made to buy their healthcare on the marketplace if they think it's so good. I do, and it's not great. And thank God for the subsidy extension, because that's gonna help me directly. But yeah, it's just so brilliant. And that's why you need more Bernies in there.
Yeah.
Because nobody's pointing that out. Nobody points out that hypocrisy except for him.
Yeah, by the way, there's a great picture going around of Bernie like sprawled on the steps of the Capitol, like exhausted from this Voterama, like just trying to do the right thing and being despised by so many people who have been convinced that this guy who's fought his whole life for their economic interests is actually the biggest villain.
It's my favorite too, because can you imagine just like being in the Senate for 24 hours, 48 hours sitting there, and like just the amount of BS, and you're like, I need a break, put me in the shade. I don't care if it's 90 degrees in DC, I cannot listen to a single more 100%. Word.
Yeah. By the way, for context, one vial of a particular kind of insulin used to cost $21 in 1999. 3 years ago, it cost $332. That is a price increase of more than $1,000. But what is often left out of that is that the price of the tiny vials it's put in, those cost 1,000% more to make. And the tiny little microglobules of stuff they put in it is way more expensive and rare. Truffle pigs need to root through the deep parts of the Amazon to find it. And I'm making all of this up. There's no excuse. They're just price gouging. That's all it is. And they're doing, knowing it, that the politicians will protect them and allow them to continue price gouging people who are literally desperate because their lives are on the line.
Including Joe Manchin's daughter helped raise the price of the EpiPen unnecessarily.
Yeah, and knowing they'll be protected. Okay, with that, we have to be a little bit quick on this, but why don't we throw to our bump? No, we have to do it. You wanna do it after the break? That's crazy. That doesn't actually save any time.
Ooh, you getting yelled at.
Okay, I'm getting bullied. Our producer Sophie was gone for a week on PTO and she came back ready to fight. So fine, we'll go to a break because she says so. I'll see you all in a few minutes. Okay, I have been assured that we can go directly into the Monday Menace, so have at it. With this weekend's Voterama, you knew that the Republicans were going to be gunning for the IRA, trying to strip it of everything that's good. But we also knew going in that they would likely get an assist from the woman who is our Monday Menace. Kyrsten Sinema, bring up this screenshot. With Sinema's help, private equity firms win relief from proposed tax hikes. So you might be thinking, no, wait, we already know about this. We know about the compromise that she wanted to, you know, do all these changes that provided additional loopholes and the carried interest and all that. No. This is on top of that. She wasn't satisfied with the ways that she protected corporations in the compromise bill like 5 days ago. She came into the Voterama to protect them even more. And so Senate Democrats agreed just yesterday to protect firms owned by the private equity industry from a new minimum tax on billion-dollar corporations. Sinema, after all, insisted on it, and what she wants goes. Now, she put out a statement saying that her goal is to, quote, target tax avoidance, make the tax code more efficient, and support Arizona's economic growth and competitiveness.
Lol.
And that, so it makes perfect sense. If you're worried about downtown Phoenix, your eyes should be cast towards Wall Street at all times, and you should be protecting Wall Street bankers constantly. That's what every Arizonan wants, I think. Anyway, she says a bunch of BS. It means nothing. I'll close by saying, did you know that she's one of the top recipients of private equity cash?
No.
Campaign donations? Only the sixth, actually. It seems like they kind of got a bargain on her. They gave her $260,000 this cycle. And if there's anything you know about an industry that can afford to spend $260,000 lobbying just one senator in one election cycle, and that doesn't even crack the top five that they've donated to, it's that they desperately need help with their taxes.
That's a lot of money.
Hard on them.
That's a lot of money, and it's incredible because I mean her shirts don't even have sleeves, so like she doesn't have to pay for, it's less cloth ultimately. Let's be real here, people. Private equity firms are everywhere, and I'm trying to understand their, like, you know, sort of Cthulhu tentacles that stretch everywhere from housing to hospitals to like every sector of our lives. And they are basically just playing, turning our lives into a casino just for the ultra rich. You can't, as a, you know, random citizen investor, again, only 10% of Americans own like 90% of the stock or something like this. Very few of us are actually invested in it. But this is even like, forget GameStop. This is like cut out from that. This is like the elite of the elite of the elite. And of course, if we ever have another 2008 financial crisis, you think we're ever gonna see a dollar out of these fools as they shut down hospitals? As they just leave buildings abandoned, as they like abdicate their responsibilities, we're being so much more reliant on these entities, and it's dangerous as hell. And here we are giving them another loophole.
100%. Yeah, I hate it. Okay, well, that's your Monday Menace. We're gonna move on to another topic in just one sec. I just wanna clarify, I saw someone chatting about this mug. To be clear, this is not a mug that I made of me and my dog. That's actually not my dog. This is JR's dog. His wife very nicely made this mug after I was like taking care of him and walking him and stuff. He's a very good dog.
So
he's not mine. Mine has actually been having a tough time over the weekend. He had an allergic reaction of some kind to a flea medicine. And so yeah, it was a difficult weekend.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, he's good now. I think he's getting better. Okay, with that, we're gonna turn to very different material, starting with this.
Jackson, my doctor. Dr. Ronnie, where's Ronnie? Where's Ronnie? Oh, he was the White House doctor. He was a great doctor, you know. He was an admiral, a doctor, and now he's a congressman. I said, which is the best? If you had your choice, And he sort of indicated, doctor, because he loved looking at my body. It was so strong and powerful. But he said, I'm the healthiest president that's ever lived. I was the healthiest. I said, I like this guy. I don't know who the hell he is at the time. I said, but I...
There's so much to love about that. Ronnie Jackson, just keep on making a fool of yourself. He's standing up. Yes, I'm being acknowledged. Oh, he's joking that I love to leer at his naked flesh. Great. I'm glad I stood up at this point. And anyway, look, Trump is joking. What he's doing there is the thing that I keep being told is him being charming. And I guess on some level, that's true. He seems to understand that he does not have a strong, powerful body, and most people probably do not want to gape at it. However, his following does seem to think that that's true. They love photoshopping him on Rambo and on Thanos and on basically anyone with like the cool V on the abs. That's really seemingly how they picture him. And they really do worship this guy. So it's good that he can have a sense of humor about it. But I wish his base would catch up when it comes to evaluations of exactly the sort of person he is. Francesca, what do you think?
I mean, I think, you know, look, comedically amazing. But that's sort of when you follow up with a like, you guys laughed a little too hard at that one. I work out. I mean, I worked out in 1989 once. I went to gym. Like, there's the... It is a little bit like, can we reverse psychology him into like actually not being a disgusting POS? I don't know, maybe. But yeah, no one has ever enjoyed looking at Donald Trump's body, ever. Even the consensual gazes, no one has enjoyed it. Stormy Daniels, documented, all right? We know this, we've heard about Mario Kart mushroom with Yeti pubes. That is a quote. All right, y'all.
I don't like it.
You want to know where like the hair is extended? Usually, obviously, you wonder. There's no toupees on the back hair either. Think about the back hair, guys.
Stop it.
Think about the long sort of
no
like
more think,
newborn
no,
baby crack,
we're
like
about it
got
anymore.
Like the sort of and like the
we
the
get
like
it.
The sort it. Of old man, you know, cellulite-y, like but not round butt, like just the. It's so bad. It's so gross. It is disgusting, you guys. It is alien-esque. The number of folds under the titties.
No, that's it. No, I am being serious now. I want the Ronnie TV Jackson. To cut her mic for at least a minute.
Like
I now Trump will not be able to eat
ET,
later.
Trump makes ET look like Channing Tatum, all right?
I mean, I've always thought ET, not bad. That alien, anyway, I'm not going to say. But anyway, this is funny for Trump. For Ronnie Jackson, the joke at the end of the day is on us because that dude is a congressman. The dude who, like Trump can joke about his strong, powerful body or whatever. Ronnie Jackson did come out and talk about him being like the strongest like person ever. Like he did actually make a laughing stock of the idea of a doctor being serious about the president. And that's not it. He spread COVID-19 misinformation. He was briefly considered to be the next secretary of the VA, but his nomination failed amid misconduct claims. He eventually left and ran for Congress, but a Department of Defense Inspector General report showed that he perpetuated a toxic work environment, drank alcohol on duty. There was talk about him popping pills constantly and engaged in sexually inappropriate conduct while serving as the White House physician. And if there is anything we love as a people, it's a handsy doctor. But anyway, while that stopped him from becoming the secretary of the VA, it did not stop him in any way from becoming a congressman. So again, the joke is on us. Anyway, don't start.
When you've got a terrible body, they let you do whatever you want. That was his pride. That was a consolation prize.
He's like,
all right,
whatever.
I'll do the prostate exam, but I'm gonna be elected in office, right?
It's not worth it, not for that salary. Anyway, with that said, I want to jump into something completely different. Let's start off with this this second video.
What you're looking at is two photos, one from the White House, which is what the one that looks like it has carpet on the bottom. The other is from an overseas trip that a Trump White House source provided me recently after some of the revelations during the January 6th hearing. People are going to make all kinds of jokes about toilets and so forth. It would still be a story if it was a fireplace. And the point is about the destruction of records, which are supposed to be preserved under the Presidential Records Act, which is a Watergate era creation.
Yeah, so the idea that the president is not supposed to actively destroy documents is a legal thing. Destroying them is potentially illegal. And the reason I want to focus on this is that I love the idea that the president could commit a crime and it would matter. I think that that's like a nice quaint thing. It's like thinking about some of the hobbies you had before the pandemic, the idea that we could catch them by them breaking the law. No, he did it and nothing will happen. You're seeing the photos next to me. Those are from one's from the White House, one is from a trip. He regularly takes the documents that are supposed to be preserved, rips them up and throws them away. The only thing that really makes this more fun is that he denied it and got caught out. But on the story, Maggie Haberman says, Mr. Trump was discarding documents this way. It was not widely known within the West Wing, but some aides were aware of the habit, which he engaged in repeatedly. The fact that they knew so much about what was going on in the toilet makes me worried for their sanity. Yep. He says it's not the only way that he ripped up documents. He often would just shred them and they'd have to be put back together. But sometimes he went farther and threw them in the can for some reason. When this was initially alleged a year or two ago, he called Maggie Haberman, Trump did, a maggot. He said she was lying, it was fake news, and she's a maggot. And now we have the photos. So I guess they can't really deny it, but Taylor Budowich, spokesperson for Trump, says you have to be pretty desperate to sell books if pictures of paper in a toilet bowl is part of your promotional plan. We know there's enough people willing to fabricate stories like this in order to impress the media class, a media class who is willing to run with anything as long as it's anti-Trump. Huh. If there's anything I know about Taylor Budowich, Trump's spokesperson, is she doesn't like the media class. She's just a spokesperson for Trump. Which is weird. Anyway, they're not even really denying anymore. Yeah, no, he ripped up papers, he threw them away because he knows that he's above the law and he can do whatever he wants.
It's so funny to me, like the Trump and the New York Times relationship and the Maggie Haberman relationship is just the most hilarious like three-part play of like you could have, she was in the palm of your hand. You screwed up the relationship. You were so corrupt. She tried to do everything to make you look human and decent, and you couldn't even play her. When you can't play the New York Times, when they're coming to the White House early on, do you remember early in the early years of the Trump administration, trying to write like fluff pieces about you, trying to hear your side of the story, and you can't play that? Bro, that's on you. That's on your entire administration. That's how corrupt you know these fools are when Maggie Haberman can't be played. Maggie centrist ass Haberman. I'm sorry, Maggie Haberman, who wants to bend over backwards to make Trump look good. But in the end of the day, watch this book, you guys. Yeah, there might be a photo of some ripped up documents, but the book will be like, for all of his flaws, Trump really loves his family. And you have to hand that to him. And as one day when Jared was wistfully looking at, like, you know that's what it's gonna be.
Yeah.
You know that's what it's gonna be.
Gotta maintain that access. Gotta maintain access to the toilet. Yeah. That's what you need. Anyway, I don't know, the image of him just taking like the government and throwing it in the toilet, it just seems sort of perfect. It's almost poetic.
You know he was doing that before, right? Isn't that amazing? Like you're like, you don't just learn to do that. That's like from like Fred when he was little and like, you know, was like, so two things. One, your mom's a bitch. And two, always put documents in the toilet. Let me show you, Donnie.
Yeah.
No, you can't get a hug. Ew.
God. Anyway, Jesus. We're with that. We're gonna take our break. When we come back, we've got a little update on what could be coming to Ukraine soon. It's one of the craziest things. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Okay, everybody, let's get crazy, starting with this.
информацию, что 100 тысяч северокорейских добровольцев готовы прибыть для участия в боевых действиях против... Более того, северокорейские строители готовы работать вместе с нашими по восстановлению разрушенных Украиной городов.
So that is Russian state TV, and their job is to just say whatever will make the people who watch it like the regime more. And apparently this is what they've landed on. The idea that 100,000 volunteers from North Korea are going to be traveling to Ukraine to fight alongside the Russian forces there. They will also be repairing the war damage, not like the damage that they did with the missiles and the rockets and the tanks and all that. Just war damage, it just happened. But they're gonna be there and they're resilient and they're undemanding. That's a weird thing to say about a group of 100,000 people, but bear in mind, there might be a reason why they would want 100,000 volunteers from North Korea. The US estimated late last month that 75,000 Russian soldiers have either been killed or the majority of which injured in Ukraine. Over 80% of Putin's land forces are bogged down and tired. And you know, we've previously reported about the number of their officers, including generals, who have died. And so maybe they've got a deal going with North Korea. Maybe they're volunteers, like North Koreans are volunteers on literally anything that happens there. Or I don't know, Francesca, maybe they do want to go. What do you think?
They're not volunteers. But if they do want to go, it's because they're planning an elaborate defection strategy to fake their own deaths and try to remain in Russia, because it is probably, in fact, certainly better than living under the North Korean regime. I am still like haunted by the images of seeing the North Korea from satellite, and at night there's no lights. There are no lights because there's very little electricity. There is very little access to basic human provisions. To say nothing of the year 2022, I don't know, 1990, 85? Basic human rights for that year. So it's just amazing, like Russia's touting this is like, oh, our great allies in North Korea, the, you know, lovers of human rights, North Korea.
100%, yeah. Look, if you're in the state media, then you're, I guess, in a difficult position. You're supposed to put a happy face on literally everything that happens. And so they spent a couple of months implying that the whole thing's gonna be super simple, done, wrapped up in the next couple days, which I understand, because many people internationally thought that it would be wrapped up really quickly. That's not true. It's been absolutely devastating economically for them, as well as the like countless thousands who've needlessly died. And so now they have to cover for it, and they have to spin. It's not that 100,000 are going. It is, assuming that it's true, that 100,000 are needed to go. And they're spinning that as a good thing. That they need a massive army of people who've been strong-armed out of North Korea to go. And it's probably not gonna happen anyway. But they're trying to spin the need for 100,000 additional forces as a good thing. I would like to present an alternative that unfortunately will never be discussed on state TV, and so the people will never consider. But you could leave. They could leave right now. In the next 3 days, all of the forces could be out of Ukraine. They could just go, and you wouldn't need any North Korean troops. You wouldn't lose any more of your own troops. You could start to stabilize your economy once again. You could start to try to repair some of the damage that's been diplomatically done to Russia. You could do all of those things, and you know what you'd lose? I don't know. Nobody seems to be making the case for what exactly they still hope to get out of this war, other than tens of thousands of additional casualties on both sides. So maybe just go. I think that would be cool. And I understand that Putin doesn't want you to. Go anyway, just leave, go back home.
No, but they have to recruit another regime that cares about its own population even less than they do. Burn through them.
Well, with that, unfortunately, we're running very low on time. And as soon as we finish our hour, we're gonna take a quick break, come back. We're gonna have an awesome talk with Olivia Giuliani. Can't wait to talk to her. But first, let's really mix it up. Difficult footage, consider yourself warned. And when we're ready, we can launch into this.
Just wait. Man, don't grab her. Hey, man, don't do that. Hey, I got him on live. I got his ass on live. He got a handcuff, man. You said you ain't had no business jumping on him. Look at this. Again,
he got on handcuffs.
Yeah, bitch. We got for recording you.
For recording you.
No, sir. Cause you going to jail.
We ain't
did
nothing. I tell you right now, y'all still here when these other folks get here. Y'all going to jail. Don't get in that car.
I ain't getting in no cop.
So that video has been going viral since this weekend. And there's a lot that we still don't know about what's in the video. We do know that the footage was taken on a highway in Mississippi. We know that the patrolman you see there was manhandling someone who's been identified as Eugene Lewis. And there were multiple bystanders who thankfully were there to film it. And while, you know, the mayor is putting out statements about there being an investigation and we'll see if that goes anywhere, I find this to be fascinating because you have to immediately wonder what would have happened if those apparently a group of three brothers hadn't been filming.
Yeah.
If they hadn't been there, you already saw the patrolman taking a man who's handcuffed and throwing him down onto the highway, seeming to sort of roll him into the grass beside the highway. He pulls out a weapon that I believe was a taser, because he also pulls out the taser on the people doing the filming later and points it at people who are just holding a cell phone. They're quite a distance away. They're just filming and saying, "We see what you're doing. There's no reason for you to be doing this. Eugene Lewis is in handcuffs. He cannot resist. Why are you doing this?" And thankfully, they did film it despite the weapon being trained on them. Even when they just tried to get back in their car, you saw him advancing on them with his weapon out. They were not armed as far as we can see. And so I'm just glad that there are people that are willing to risk potentially being tased or shot by a guy who wants to cover up what he was doing, Francesca.
Yeah, I mean, we usually see these videos and they're body cam videos. They're body cam footage. You see cops talking among themselves. They treat someone like an animal. JR and I did a show, an episode recently, and we looked at a story of a young woman who was having a mental breakdown, and they treated her like she was not human, and she fell out of a car and later died. I mean, this is, so when you have someone filming, like Darnella Frazier filming George Floyd, that is the difference. We can't rely on the cops. We can't rely on their body footage. We rely on one another. We rely on people taking out their phones and filming them, and thank God they were there and as a voice of a moral reason, because the cops are completely bankrupt of it.
Yeah, 100%. So we'll see what happens with the investigation. It'll be interesting to see if the body cam footage does eventually come out. You know, we might see a little bit earlier on in that incident what exactly led to it, if there was any violence beforehand. But you see so much about the current battle over accountability for cops live in that video. You have someone who sees what's happening. As soon as you see that incident start, you know how it all too often goes in America. And then you see the cop reacting almost instantly with threats, with intimidation, and potentially with violence because you dare to film them. Mm-hmm. There really has to be, like, you are allowed to do it. It is legal. There needs to be some sort of consequence for cops who try to shut down people from doing their constitutional right. And in some ways, I think a case can be made duty of filming these sorts of things to try to stop some of the violence from happening. Anyway, with that said, we are unfortunately out of time for this first hour, but there is more coming if you're watching the full extended show. A little bit more news, as well as a talk with Olivia Giuliani, who successfully raised literally millions of dollars thanks to Matt Gaetz being the worst person ever. So we're gonna be breaking that down with her, talking a little bit about the fight over the future of abortion in America. And there's more news besides. So thank you if you've been watching on the linear platforms or on the podcast, but for those on other platforms, don't go anywhere. We're going to take a couple minute break and then we'll be back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.